come with me into the tormented, haunted, half-lit night of the insane. This is my work. Let me lead you into it. Let me take you into the mind of a woman who is mad.
Hi, and welcome to Beyond the Cabin in the Woods, a good ghoul's guide to horror. I'm your poltergeist, Kinsey.
I'm your poltergeist, Donna.
No, I'm your poltergeist, Mac.
And this week, as you guys know, we are smack dab in the middle of our Stephen King suite, and we watched the infamous, and I'm going to really stress infamous, Maximum Overdrive. So I know everybody has seen this before, so let's just go around. Did you like it? Did you not like it? Or am I wrong and had somebody not seen it before?
I feel like Donna may not.
Oh, I've seen it before. As a huge fan of Stephen King, of course I've seen it before. And I just have to say, Stevie, oh, Stevie, you know I love you. My God, dude. My God.
To be fair, I believe he agrees with you.
Yeah, I found a quote in here about when somebody asked him why he hasn't directed since. He said, have you seen Maximum Overdrive?
Yeah.
So he's aware. I will say it wasn't as bad as I remembered it being. There are actually places where it's fun. There are fun. Hey, there's some fun moments.
I'm going to stringently disagree, but please keep going.
But this is really bad. I do suggest if you want to watch it that you consume whatever your preferred form of chemical.
Go to your altered state. Yeah.
To your preferred altered state. Get on your highest plane of altered consciousness before you watch this film. That is
or
really
lowest. Lowest might be better.
And depress the hell out of your central nervous system before you attempt to watch this, because god damn Stevie. Woo. And here's what pisses me off. The short story that this is based on is tight. It is
that can't possibly be true. I believe what you're saying, that but the logical part of my brain, like, no, this story's got to be trash. There can't be anything good in
it. It is tight. It is a tight short story. It is so good. I'll tell you, it ends at the scene where they're filling up the trucks and the character's existential dread at the thought that that's what the rest of their lives is going to be, is filling up the trucks.
Mm.
That's where it ends.
It's a better ending. I'll grant that. Yeah.
So it's a good short story. And I'll stop now.
Okay. Not only have I seen it before.
Mm-hmm.
Donna, in the middle of the movie, came in with, and our group Discord, with, whose idea was this? And there was an implicit criticism there that it seemed like it would have been my idea.
I think it might have been mine.
It might have been yours. It might have been Kenzie's. I can't remember. I know it wasn't mine, because not only have I seen this, I have in my brain the strongest, most clear memory of us actually having done this for the podcast before. It was in a before time when we were recording in a different space. I remember sitting there with the people that were involved in the podcast at the time, discussing specifically the opening scene with King's cameo and the ATM. It's bad. I will agree with Donna. I don't agree that there's fun in it. I think not only is it just nonsense, it's really boring. I was bored by this movie. We had some talk in the rule section about Donna's suggestion was make it make sense. I'm like, no, a movie can be very pleasurable and not make a damn bit of sense. Don't be boring would have been my corollary on that, because this, I mean, it's a beyond the myth of King. It's a first time director whose skill set is not directing. You can tell it's a writer trying to direct for the first time in a very egregious way, because it opens and closes with these absolutely ponderous opening titles explaining everything that he couldn't tell us visually. So yeah, bad movie, boring. I really had a hard time paying attention to it. It was badly made, schlocky stuff, but wasn't very interesting either.
So I have seen this before. I have not seen this since I was a child, because being a child that grew up in the 80s and Stephen King, and this was a movie that was always on. Like, I remember, you know, Billy and I were talking about this. It was always on TV at some point. And so I had seen this before. When we did have our summit meeting last year and this was brought up, I don't remember who suggested it. I do remember asking with my cup of coffee firmly in hand, are we sure?
Then it had to have been Donna. Because I know it wasn't me, because I pushed back against it saying, didn't we already do this? And then I went back to the list forensically. Yeah. And the list does not reflect my memory, but the memory still exists.
Well, it's just such an infamous movie that we have. And we all three read Stephen King, and we have talked about it quite extensively with, you know, off mic and everything.
Maybe that's what I'm remembering. But
that is what I remember, is just like, are we sure? And because I am a ride or die kind of gal, I'm like, okay, then we'll do it. Let's, you know, roll tape.
So with the investigation complete, whose idea was this, Donna? Yours.
I do not concur with the logic there, but I understand how you got to that conclusion.
Okay. I 100% know it was not me, so much so that I fought against it due to false memories.
Now, that being said, I don't care for this movie. I forgot how just out there it is on things, and just, you know, the making things make sense. And I do agree with you, Mac, also, that it is boring. Like, it is, it's not even an hour and 40 minutes. And it's a tough slog to get through, especially being in any unaltered state.
If I had been in an altered state, I would have fallen asleep, period. Like,
yeah.
My third eye would have been like, nope, nothing here.
I mean, I am going to say, there is a bright, shining star in this film.
Oh, I know who you're going to talk about.
Yes. Giancarlo Esposito.
He is good and dispatched far too quickly.
Yes. Before we jump into interesting people in this film, because he's going to be our number one, IMDb wants you to know what this is really about.
Oh, boy.
As a warning, as a customer service.
Yeah. Which is, a group of people try to survive when machines start to come alive and become homicidal.
Okay. But, and I'm mystified IMDb doesn't even make an oblique reference to this. It's not the comet with trucks. It's Night of the Comet with Trucks. The planet Earth is in the tail of a comet, and something strange is going to happen. Like, Stevie, I've seen that movie. Shame on you. I didn't really even like that one.
So, Donna brought up Giancarlo Esposito, and this is video game player. That is what he's credited as in the film, which I didn't recognize him at all. Like, Billy's like, wait, I know him. He's like, is that Giancarlo?
And so,
you know, used the little nice function on Prime that lets you see the cast. And it's like, holy shit, that's Giancarlo Esposito.
I didn't realize it was him until I saw the end credits. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, here's another interesting actor in this film. Marla Maples is in this film. She is in the wreck scene at the very beginning that is has the watermelons in it, that she's like, watermelons. But Marla Maples is in this movie.
No kidding.
Yeah, no kidding.
Huh.
Yeah, the woman attacked by watermelons in that opening scene is Marla Maples.
Oh,
my goodness.
Yep. Only scene she's in, but yeah, that is her.
Interesting. So she's seen worse stuff than this movie. That's
That's
virtually a guarantee.
Right. This may be a high point in things she's seen.
Yeah.
So we mentioned about things needing to make sense. So I just wanted to. So this is the thing that bothered me.
The only thing.
Here is the thing. I need someone to make sense for me. So
ain't gonna happen, but keep going.
Meat slicers, hair dryers, pinball machines and video games. Apparently, as we see at the very, very end, automatic windows, these have all turned against us. Trucks, bulldozers, and little bitty carts with guns on them have turned against us. Cars have not. Why are cars still our friends?
Cars are Autobots.
Donna, my love, I'm going to tell you the same thing that I told Billy as we were watching this. The answer is always cocaine.
I think that's really committing a certain amount of slander against cocaine. it's more somebody who directed a movie because it would have been fun. He had no ambition to direct a movie. The real contrast of this, I think, is in the Star Trek movies. Nimoy started directing movies, and he did a really good job with them because he wanted to become a director. He was interested in that craft. Shatner then directed one because Nimoy got to direct one, and that's why we got Star Trek V. This is somebody could sell the poster of Stephen King directing a movie, and that's what happened. And King was altered states enough to be like, sure, that's what happened.
If King, who admits wholeheartedly the altered states that he was in for this film, hasn't kept repeating that it was the cocaine that and talked about it, that would not be my go-to answer. Like if he hadn't said, you know, oh yeah, I was, you know, struggling with drug abuse, blah blah blah, then I would definitely concede the floor to the Nimoy Shatner thing, first time director, all of that, put it on the poster. No, my answer is going to be cocaine.
A clean and sober King now would not do much better.
Probably not, but
that's the point.
Yeah, at least he would be clean and sober, which Billy read some interesting trivia that apparently George Romero ghost directed parts of this film.
Like, interesting.
Because King was, it's never been confirmed, but he was getting treatment. He was in treatment. And so Romero
really
ghost directed some of the film. That is the little interesting.
The film should be better if that's really the case. I doubt that only because if Romero tried to rescue it, it should have been a little bit better.
I mean, the trivia that that he read didn't, like, you know, for days right. 7 through 10, you know, he's
right. You know, I get it. Yeah.
So I thought that was kind of that was a little interesting there, bit of trivia.
Because I was reading, like, some of the crew insist that they never saw him using cocaine during the movie, but they saw that he was drunk all the time.
Okay.
So I think there's maybe some conflicting stories. And then, you know, obviously time is going to dull memories.
Yeah.
The cinematographer got injured by a lawnmower and never worked on a major motion picture again.
That's the one that got that sued him for $18 million.
Yep. And got part of that at least. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
My goodness.
Injured his eye.
Yeah.
Which for a cinematographer is not a great idea.
No, it's kind of
of important for a cinematographer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So speaking of things very King, I forgot that AC/DC did the soundtrack to this and that felt very, it's like, that's on brand. That tracks for King,
which definitely explains that there's a slight change in line. Let me see because I actually read Trucks. That was the last thing before I went to bed last night. The line from the story is slightly different. We made them, they can't. We made them, they can't. So it looks like he changed the line slightly to fit better with the song.
Who made who?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
In the story, it's we made them, we made them, and we made you, we made you. Very minor change, but.
Speaking of the machines and it not making sense, like, I liked that the army vehicle, the little machine gun army vehicle, it growls after the first time it fired. I thought that was pretty funny that there was a little growl. There comes a point for me in this film that I just went with my laughs. Like, I just couldn't. I think it's,
you
started,
gave into full Stockholm syndrome.
Yeah. Like when the little kid that his bike flips over just because He finds the one gopher hole in the baseball field so he can get run over by the steamroller. It may have been when I saw the pneumatic, the actual special effect of shooting the Coke cans out of the machine, the little pneumatic tube. Like, I just...
I saw that too. I saw that too. And I was like, wait, I thought that was... Is that a pitching machine? I thought it was a Coke machine. No.
Yeah, it's
those
a Coke.
Are definitely Coke cans. Yep. What the fuck?
I knew.
Okay.
So I knew because I hadn't watched this yet, and I saw Mac on Friday, and I had made a comment about not having watched this yet. I knew I was going to be in for something interesting because Mac's face was like, ooh, I watched it. And it was like that, just like.
That was not my communication. It was like, oh, it's really boring. Here we are watching Phantom Menace, a controversial film itself, on the qualities of interesting and not interesting. And you hadn't seen that. I was like, I was like, oh, good.
Yeah, definitely different read, but it's still, yep. It's the same point though. Just the.
Here's a question. Right. And Donna might be able to further deepen this mystery. Why the fuck is this movie not taking place in Maine?
Cheaper to film in North Carolina?
Okay, yes, it's cheaper to film in North Carolina, sure. Yeah, and in fact, it even goes on to say that De Laurentiis was like, yeah, you're shooting in North Carolina. It's a right-to-work state. We don't have to use a union crew.
Oh, yikes.
Which is bad. But... Sure, shoot in North Carolina, but call it Maine.
I don't know.
I don't know if they could have.
Oh, they can make Vancouver look like any city on planet Earth. They can just put a title that says Maine, and I would be like, ah, yes, Maine.
Supernatural called Toronto, Oklahoma. So, you know. So I don't know. I do know that several states have for a while been going out of their way to try and encourage people to come. Film there. Oh, you know, Oklahoma is currently doing that.
Yeah.
But once they get them there, why they can't claim to be someplace else, I don't know.
Right. Because they do that all the time.
Yeah.
The amount of places on the X-Files that Canada had to double for.
Yeah. I don't. Except, well, I don't know. I'm sure Maine has a summer. I was going to say, except, you know, we couldn't put the chick in the mini skirt and tank top.
I think they allow mini skirts and tank tops in Maine. I don't think there's an ordinance or anything.
I don't know. No. I've never personally been to Maine, so I can't, yeah. You know.
And I can't. Like I said, they do have summer.
Yeah.
And a hot, sort of sweltering one, if I understand correctly.
But
I'm reading Cujo now ahead of that episode, and from what I understand, Maine hot summers are sort of muggy and sweaty.
Yeah, and like you wouldn't want to be trapped in a car during one.
Or have any number of things happen to you that are completely undog related. But that's a discussion for another episode.
Right. You have no idea how much I love talking about rabies.
Ooh,
actually, Donna, we do know.
I can guess. If there's a scale... of how much someone loves to talk about rabies, I would put you certainly at one end of that spectrum.
Yeah. I mean, it's a fascinating disease.
Other films, Donna, we've heard you start the rabies discussion, and you even reference Cujo, which we will be discussing next time.
You sure you don't want to start that discussion now? We can start that discussion now.
Are the trucks rabid?
You know, it's not likely because they don't have a central nervous system. You see, rabies needs to infect a central nervous system.
That's an interesting philosophical question because the trucks are now sentient, which would tend to insist upon a central nervous system.
I would like to hear a mechanism by which they grew a central nervous system, which brings me to a point. How the fuck did the bridge turn its own switches?
Or did it have its own agency to make its mechanism shift, which then reversing the trend would flip the switches? It was the switches were incidental.
But see, there has to be Like they don't have a muscle. Like things turn themselves on and off. I actually can wrap my brain around that. We just need to have like enough electricity going through there to trigger that switch. Okay, I can get my brain wrapped around that. Okay, we just need a flip switch. Yes, that's exactly the phrase I meant to use. I could get things turning themselves on and off. That I can get there. But like a whole mechanism like that, that was a big thing that needed to be moved. And there's no muscle. That needed more.
You're overthinking this movie to an almost criminal level, I would say.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I will accept that. But again, I'm part of the make it make sense contingent.
You are. And Donna, once again, cocaine.
Once again, even clean and sober King wouldn't have made any sense as a director.
No, but the source material, you would have read it as Donna did with Trucks, and you've been like, fuck yeah. Okay, I get that. Yeah, you just can't film that, but I get it. It makes sense. That's the...
I have consciously avoided Trucks because there's just no way it can be any good based off of this movie, but I accept your statement.
Okay, listen. Trucks starts... First off, it's a classic iGuy story, okay? There's very little development of anyone besides the iGuy, okay? So it's told from the point of view of one character. He is in control. All the other characters are secondary to him. And it starts with the trucks already circling the truck stop. It starts about the time the power goes out in the truck stop. And it ends when, like I mentioned earlier, they're pumping gas for the trucks. So it's a snippet of what we saw on screen. Most of the characters we saw don't exist because it's just the only character is King's iGuy.
Is it Emilio Estevez? Is it Emilio?
Does he stop the story somewhere in the middle and contemplate why he looks more like Martin Sheen than Charlie Sheen does?
I had that thought, but
are you saying Emilio does not look like more like his father than
Charlie Sheen? I think Emilio looks more. As a younger version of myself, I did not see it, but now as I am an adult, mm-hmm. I'm like, holy shit, that's definitely Martin Sheen's kid. Like that is no.
Okay, I was like, sure. Whoa, this is beyond make it make sense. This is like, look at him. I mean, just look at him.
Just read the story. Trust me. The similarity between the two stories is that it's a story where there's trucks circling a truck stop. I
don't know if I'll go out of my way for it, but the next time I'm drifting through Night Shift, I will remember this conversation and try to read it.
And I mean, and I have heard that out of King's short story collection, Night Shift, that book is top tier on the short stories.
It's really good.
I've heard the whole book in general is mm-hmm. tippy top tier. So
yeah,
to help with Donna's.
And by the way, the Truthway Bible Salesman, they didn't have Stilson selling Bibles in Dead Zone in the movie, but in the book, he was a Truthway Bible Salesman.
He was.
I do appreciate with this film, I know that it's weird to say, that there are certain King archetype characters that show up and the Bible salesman and just how he is, like that's King. Like that is, you know, you mm-hmm. see this some form of this character show up across all media. mm-hmm. So I appreciated that. I was like, yeah, that's yeah.
Yes. The other thing that I found weird on this viewing is apparently my brain just corrected the Curtis and Connie problem. My brain was just like, no, that didn't happen that way. Because apparently there's a moment early on in the Curtis and Connie relationship where Connie takes the wheel and drives away. And my brain just stopped and said, okay, that's how those characters interact from now on, where Connie was a tough, efficient, effective character through the rest of the film. And I was very disappointed to learn that that was not, in fact, the case.
No, it was not the case with Connie. She was a stereotype damsel in distress. But interestingly enough about Connie, that is Lisa Simpson's voice actor, yep. Yeardley Smith. So another little interesting, more interesting little bits of cast. That
performers you would enjoy more in other things. I mean, you got Pat Hingle, who is my first and foremost Commissioner Gordon.
Oh, but he's so bad in this.
He's so bad in this. But he decided he loved Wilmington so much that he lived there the rest of his life.
Really?
You bought a house. Like, you're like, oh, man, I had such a great time on Maximum Overdrive. I'm going to keep this train going. yeah. Good cast for the most part. But not a good movie. Not even a little bit.
Yeah.
I will say I have fewer notes on this certainly than average, and maybe the fewest notes on this I have had for almost any Cabin movie.
The actress that plays Brett has not been in anything since 1999.
Yeah, I knew she hadn't, and I didn't realize she's the oldest sister in What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Yep.
Huh.
She's also in Buckaroo Banzai.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, if you'd asked my father, he probably would have been like, oh yeah, I remember her in Buckaroo Banzai, because my dad loves that movie.
Good for your dad. It's a good movie.
Yeah. I need to watch it as an adult because I have not seen it since I was a kid.
It had been a number of years. I watched it recently and it was better than I remembered it.
Why? Okay. So not a lot of quotes that we brought for this one. Mac had a very funny one, which was just on the board, which was 7 degrees Fahrenheit. Fuck you.
Yep. My vote for best line in the movie, although we had a consensus quote for the movie.
And that is why we went with what we did, was because we all three had it.
It had the benefit of not having to be delivered by an actor and just written, which is where King was probably going to do better anyway.
Yeah. But Donna, you have our quote.
Our quote is, honey, come on over here, sugar buns. This machine just called me an asshole.
The amount of sugar buns, honey buns, like sugar baby. What? There was a lot of that in this movie. A lot of.
You wonder if it wasn't in the script, but like King was in North Carolina for a half an hour and was like, oh, I got to rewrite this whole script. Sugar buns, honey buns. Every mainism in this is going to be turned into honey buns.
I mean,
yep. Nope. Can't have that.
Yeah.
Cocaine.
No, yep.
Well, yeah. In the car.
Macula, you yes. have our rule.
Think of this in the general cadence or tone of the Maybelline commercials. Maybe he's great at everything. Maybe it's just cocaine. Which is the only thought process I can think of in the movie, but the rule needs to be, maybe it's just cocaine.
Yeah, there's no... I know Donna wanted it to make sense, but you just it's cocaine. Not.
I love movies that don't make sense sometimes. It that is not a clincher for me. This, yeah.
Yeah. And now our poll.
What Why? The fuck? Or to put it more specifically, why did it take so long for King to get help? Because Kenzie mentioned that there was a possibility he was in treatment during the production of this movie, and Romero took over for a while. But he wasn't really clean for another several years, if I'm remembering right. It was late 80s at least before he turned the corner on that.
I mean, he had a couple of deadlines to do, a couple books. Sure. And I mean, Tommyknockers, I'm looking at you.
Cujo, oh, I'm reading you right now, and I remember things that are happening in the book, which is more than I can say for King.
Stevie.
I mean, I think the why, and I know I've been saying it a lot, and I'm not going to say cocaine, but I think the why is, let's cash a check. This was peak King heyday adaptation, primo time. And
yeah, it didn't matter what the movie was. You could you look at the poster and it's telling you exactly what's on their mind. It shows King's face with like Godfather like puppet strings over a truck doesn't really even make, it's not like, oh, it's the new Emilio Estevez picture, or oh gosh, I really want to see them trucks. The guy that is so famous for scaring us is taking the direct helm of a movie. So it's got to be good.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly what it is.
The horror master.
Yeah.
So he's going to know. So
if there was a Stephen King movie you didn't like before, don't worry. King's got total control right now.
Yeah. It's you've heard all that bullshit with The Shining. Yeah, he's going to fix that.
Yeah.
Did
you hate The Shining? Well, then this is the movie for you. Fuck you, Stanley Kubrick. We're taking over. Trucks. De Palma? Carrie? More like De Palma. No. It's truck time.
Do we have anything else before we jump into Happy Place with Maximum Overdrive?
No, I think I'm done. And let's not gaslight me in the future and say we didn't do this movie.
No, I think we should do Maximum Overdrive next year. Mac, we've never done it before.
But I remember talking about it.
That now, Donna, that's what you and I have to do is every year going forward on our summit meeting, one of us needs to suggest Maximum Overdrive.
The only way it'll work is if Billy never posts this episode. Because then what broke it, like, I insisted we did it, and then I looked at all the episode list, and it's not there. So I accept that we didn't do it, even though my memory tells me differently.
So one thing before we jump into Happy Place about this movie that I had just forgot, but Billy pointed out, which was really funny, is that the machines kind of learn, like, they start out like, oh, we're gonna cuss, like there's a lot of, you know, cussing, like calling somebody an asshole and saying fuck you, and then it's like, then they just slowly go to murder. Just a little, mm-hmm. you know, little growth for the machines, if you will.
Okay, but to be fair, an ATM can't do much worse than paper cuts.
True.
That's about the worst an ATM can do to you.
I mean,
I don't know, if you got your hand, like, depending on how old it is, if you got your hand in there to try to retrieve your card, it could try to take your hand, maybe. And then the money spout has a certain ingress sort of quality to it that it could, like, if I was there, like, hey, Steve, you're going to have the thing, like, do something, make it eat you a little bit, like, you know, just as a treat.
Not call you an asshole. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Like, I got into full Jordy Ferrell makeup. Leave me alone.
You know, he tried acting. This was the next logical step, okay? For cocaine drunk king was, I'm going to be a director.
And again, I love him. Not a good actor, Stevie.
That's fine.
Yeah.
He has other skills.
Lie in other areas.
And to his credit, he has not subjected us to Renaissance Man King in nigh on 40 years.
True.
He is stuck to his lane.
God love him for it.
Yeah.
When he does do a cameo, it's usually a very, very small cameo.
Yeah, he was in It Chapter 2. He was not bad in that.
No.
I am the bookshop owner. I have one little line, and then I'm out.
And I mug for the camera. That's it. Yeah. And that's great. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Happy Place. All right. So Friday, Billy and I went to Mac's beloved Circle Cinema with Mac, actually, and saw the 25th anniversary screening of Star Wars The Phantom Menace. They were doing a big little party celebration about it. And I just had so much fun sitting in the very back row in between Billy and Mac and Mystery Science Theatering the whole thing. And then both of them would say different things, but then I would want to make sure that the other one heard it, because it was really funny. So there's a couple times I'd be like, Mac said this, and then I'd be like, Billy said that, you know, and just, it was just so much fun. And I haven't had that much fun in Phantom Menace. I don't remember the last time I've had that much fun in Phantom Menace. Also, because of the party, met the host of Sisterhood of the Traveling Bantha. Hi, Rexy. Hi, Denise. Fabulous, fabulous ladies. So that was also really nice. But yeah, just it's been a long time that I have had a lot of that genuine fun with Star Wars like that. And I had that, maybe not the way it was intended with the Phantom Menace, but
yeah. Well, I think we were a good audience.
We were a great audience.
Yeah, like we were having fun with it. We understand the film's flaws, but we were not judgy. We were not.
No. Like,
if Jake Lloyd, God bless him, were in that theater, he would have had fun time too. We weren't harping on him.
No, we were not mean. Yeah. And we were, I mean, honestly, now Lucas might have not appreciated some of our comments, but
I made a remark about Linda Ronstadt that he would not have appreciated. No, underlined.
That was funny though. So just, yeah, it was a good time. It was a lot of fun. And then both of you basically doing the same kneel before Zod joke, like I had it in like unison, was like, yeah, that's gold.
Yep. Son of Midichlorian, kneel before Zod.
Oh, wait, damn it. Sorry, wrong. All right, who wants to go next on Happy Place?
I'll follow up on that to give a clearer picture. I will focus not so much on the Phantom Menace of it all, except for there was a very high-quality R2-D2 replica there. And the ongoing gag is, I mean, it's true. There's this weird part of my brain when I see a really high quality moving around. It's obviously remote controlled, but there is a good degree of verisimilitude of R2-D2 being a autonomous droid. I get weird. Like, I get around celebrities. Like, just a couple of weeks ago, I met Ethan Hawke. That wasn't so big. Like, oh, he's in Gattaca. Hey, how you doing? But then R2-D2, I was like, okay, don't look him directly in the eye. Don't stare. Because he's just a droid hanging out. Like, he's here for the movie. I don't want to be weird about it. And then when we sat down in the theater, they rolled the R2-D2 replica right next to me. And I'm just, I'm looking at it, eventually I get it out of my head. And then we're making some comment and I look to the right and I'm like, shit, I forget he's there.
Was there a person in R2-D2?
No, it was a remote controlled thing. Like, there was a guy usually okay. within about 10 feet of him. With a device moving him around.
I may have not helped the situation because when the R2 did roll beside Mac, I leaned over to Mac. I'm like, Mac, you need to be cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Like, he's just trying to enjoy the movie. So be cool.
Be cool, Mac. Be cool.
Yeah. And I didn't want to see anything mean about the movie because he worked hard on it. He's a good guy. He did 9 films of solid work. You can't take it away from him. I just admire him greatly, and I didn't want to, like, be weird about it.
Yeah. Don't want to say anything about the work he's had done, you know, because he's...
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That he looks larger in person than he does on the screen. That's not helpful. Like, I'm sure he gets that all the time. Like, whoa, you're way bigger.
You can't help that the circumference looks, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, the camera takes away pounds from droids. Little known fact. But the real happy place was before the movie, before they showed up, I was accidentally being the maximum me I could be. I'm sitting there in the lobby of a theater waiting to go into a movie. I've got a little bit of popcorn, having a little bit of drink. And over the course of that, I'm making notes on festival screeners because I'm on the screening committee of a festival. And then after that, I started reading a chapter out of a book from Roger Ebert. And I'm like, I'm sitting here in an art house theater reading Ebert and making screener notes. I don't know if I can go further in the scope of meanness than this. So that's the actual happy place.
Mac was living his best life.
Yeah. For those few minutes, I was actualized. I was at the top of the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And then the Phantom Menace started and I went down a level or two.
Yeah, but at least, you know, there was giggles involved. Oh, yeah. With, you know.
I did. I don't normally leave a movie in circle to go get additional snacks, but I timed that right. Just as they're about to arrive at Tatooine, I said, you know, this movie's going to stop for about half an hour. I'm going to go get a pretzel. Got a pretzel, came back. I had just missed the Are You an Angel scene, and I was like, oh, man, I couldn't have timed that out better if I had wanted to. And I did.
But you sounded disappointed to me that you missed it because you came back with your pretzel and your drink. And you're like, did I miss the angel scene? I was like, yeah. And you were like, oh. Like, I thought I heard disappointment. Now, I need to clarify something here. I had an adult beverage as we were on the first half of the Phantom Menace. I don't normally partake in adult beverages, so my tolerance is a little, it's really not there. So I was having a fantastic time at Phantom Menace, thanks to the blue milk, which I highly recommend if you're going to get an adult beverage at Circle, they don't fuck around. And you should definitely partake.
Healthy portions of the adult portion of the beverage, yes.
In not a very large cup. Like,
right. Donna, what's your happy place?
What is your happy place?
You didn't come. I brought it up to the group and you're like, no.
Well, yeah. this is the last.
Yeah.
Next week is finals week. And I have written two tests of my three tests that I had to write this week. So, no, I did indeed say no to that invitation. And then I got sick. Yeah. So I have been sleeping most of this week when I needed to write three tests. So it's been fun. So no, I did not go to that, what sounds like a delightful experience. No. So one, I have to say that while they were saying all this, I went and looked up and then experienced a moment of pure horror when I saw that The Phantom Menace was released in 1999.
Yeah.
Sometime in the last millennium.
Yeah. So that was 25 years ago, apparently. Mm-hmm. And I cannot cope with that because what else happened in 1999 was I graduated from the University of Oklahoma. And that cannot be 25 years ago. That's not possible that that was 25 years ago.
I'm
no, don't even, Mac.
No, 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 no. This is, I'm with you on this. This is not, I'm going to make it worse for you. I could do that, but I'm not going.
Please don't.
I'm at the theater. I got my tickets. I'm getting the concessions. And of course, I know everybody there. I'm the Norm Peterson of Circus Cinema. So I'm talking to the guy and we're talking about Phantom Menace. And he says, oh, man, yeah, it's great. I was born the year it came out. And I'm like, well, I'll just take my popcorn and leave then.
So that's my feelings about things that happened 25 years ago. Anyway, I have to say that I am never, ever very far away from wanting to play Fallout again. And then the Fallout TV series came on Amazon, and that was the last straw. And now I am happily wandering around the Commonwealth wasteland, which it just occurred to me may have been my happy place last time. I don't know.
It was, but that's okay, Donna, because
it can be a multi-part happy place.
This well, it is still
the,
is.
Yeah. This is so for me, this is the second week in a row that my happy place is tied into another one of you guys. Like, because with Donna, it was the Fallout TV series and Fallout. And this week it was the Circle event. So I think I like that. I like.
So I finally got Nick to give me his loyalty quest.
Nice.
It turned out that I had been ignoring the main storyline for too long. And that's why Nick wasn't giving me his loyalty quest. And so I went and progressed to the main storyline. And as soon as I did that, Nick was like, hey, can you do me a favor? And I was like, you bet, because you're my favorite. He's not my favorite, but he's one of my favorites. He is on the list of my favorites. And we went and did this loyalty quest. And so anyway, the Commonwealth Wasteland, weirdly enough, is my happy place.
I like it. Well, you can find us on social media, on Facebook, Instagram, and Threads. We're Beyond the Cabin in the Woods. Our website and Blue Sky username is beyondthecabininthewoods.com. I am on Instagram, Blue Sky, and Threads as @Callista77.
Oh, I'm @DragonGoblin.com on Blue Sky, and I'm @DragonGoblin on Instagram. There's no I in Goblin.
I am @PartyApocalypse on any social media platform that might exist when you hear this. Some platforms I'm going to be active on, some things I'm not, but even when I'm active, I'm not that active. This podcast and other fine podcasts are on partyapocalypse.com, including The Holodeck is Broken with myself and Laura and Eris and Canyon. The three of them also co-host Disorganized, a Criminal Minds podcast. There are full runs of The Fourth Wall, As the Myth Turns, and Friendables, Two Friends Talking About Hannibal Lecter, books, blogs, movie reviews, and nothing else. The end.
As always, thank you to our editor, Billy. We appreciate all that you do for wrangling in all of our shenanigans and just making us sound great.
We love you, Billy.
And thank you for listening. Please rate, review, and subscribe to us if you aren't doing so already.
And don't use cocaine.
Bad. It's a bad drug.
You know what horror is?